You're listening to the Book Club at 91.7 on WVXU and WMUB. I'm Mark Purcell. Good morning. On the phone with me is William Finnegan. His memoir, Barbarian Days, A Surfing Life, is now available in paperback. Barbarian Days was named Best Book of the Year by, among others, the New York Times Book Review, the Washington Post, the Daily Beast, ABC News, and many, many others. It also won the 2016 Pulitzer Prize for Biography. William Finnegan, welcome to the Book Club at 91.7.
Oh, thanks for having me, Mark.
As I was reading Barbarian Days, A Surfing Life, you really captured just that thrill of riding a wave in a way that I hadn't seen with previous surfing books. And I'm curious, as I read the book and saw where you are in life now, why you decided now was the time you needed to write about your surfing life.
Well, I actually decided to write about it a long time ago. It just took me 20 years to write.
Oh.
So, I don't know. I mainly do political journalism, broadly defined. I write long pieces for The New Yorker, where I've been on staff since 87. And actually, the first assignment I ever got from The New Yorker was to do I'd sold them a small piece over the transom, a political piece, and I got this assignment to write a profile. I proposed it of a guy I was surfing with at the time in San Francisco. So I ended up finally doing that piece. And that was the first time I think I'd published anything substantial about surfing. And that led to the idea that I should do a memoir. I mean, that I had this strange secret life and took up a lot of time and had taken me a lot of places and still does. So the idea was around for ages. But my usual work, other books and New Yorker pieces, all has a kind of topicality and inherent urgency. I mean, my first couple of books were about South Africa and I continue to write about war and civil war and different kinds of conflict and crisis, and those projects tend to take precedence. You know, this is urgent. I have to write about this now. Does anybody really need to know about my hobby? So often this book would be sort of back burnered, even though it was in many ways more fun to write and at the same time a little bit more difficult, all the introspection. But I finally got it done.
Well, you write about in the book, as you were considering this, you talk about your work as a journalist and worried about your surfing world and your journalism world infecting each other. You thought you would lose some journalistic cred by being a surfer, and you thought you'd lose some surfing cred by being a journalist.
That's well put. I think, yeah, that first piece I was, that profile, the guy I was surfing with in San Francisco, I did hesitate for years before finally filing that piece, partly because I was mainly writing about politics, including a lot of opinion columns, and sort of I was involved in public policy debates, and it's not such a good idea to come out of the closet as a surfer. You know, I thought I might be dismissed as, you know, just a dumb surfer, you know, the stereotype, and that didn't happen. I mean, that worry was groundless, but it did feel like mutually exclusive worlds, and it's true that when I was kind of revealed as a reporter there in the small community of people surfing in San Francisco in those days, I don't know if I lost credibility, but suddenly people were, you know, stepping back from me. Oh, I thought you were just another guy in the lineup, and here you are with a notebook, you know. So it did cut both ways.
I'm speaking with William Finnegan. His memoir, Barbarian Days, A Surfing Life, is available now in bookstores and paperback, New York Times bestseller and winner of the 2016 Pulitzer Prize for Biography. You mentioned early in the book, William, about surfing, that, and I'll quote you here, "I did not consider even passingly that I had a choice when it came to surfing. My enchantment would take me where it would." And surfing certainly has it's taken you all over the world.
It's true. I grew up in Southern California in Hawaii, and you know, learned to surf there and traveled a bit as I could. But always had in mind, do you remember that documentary, Endless Summer, from the mid-60s?
Oh, yeah.
It was one of the very few crossover depictions of surfing, I mean, that mainstream audiences could relate to or care about. And it was a really good documentary for its time, quite a period piece now. But it had a real powerful influence on kids. I was probably 10 when it came out. in my world where you just all felt, we all felt like, you know, we have to do that someday. And it wasn't that those guys had really done it. It was, you know, there was a filmmaker who hired a couple of good, you know, pro surfers to come with him and make this film. But we all had this notion that, you know, when you grow up and you can save some money, you've got to set off and, you know, travel around the world finding ways. And so I had that. And when I finished graduate school, I'd save some money working on the railroad in California. And I set off with a friend, Brian Salvatore, also a writer and surfer. And I was gone nearly 4 years in the South Pacific and Southeast Asia, Australia, Southern Africa, looking for waves. So it really did sort of drag me around the world, and in a way dragged me to the work I ended up doing. I mean, I worked a lot of day jobs in those days to support my surf addiction, and the last one was as a high school teacher in South Africa, outside Cape Town. This is in the bad old days of apartheid, and I was teaching in a black high school, and it was intensely political situation. The students went out on strike against apartheid and education, and by the end of that year, I just was really keen on doing political journalism and started freelancing, and that's the career I ended up choosing. So surfing kind of dragged me everywhere, including into work.
Where was that spark that started you on surfing? I mean, you talked about growing up in California and then going to Hawaii, where, you know, you already surfed, and when you get to Hawaii, that just elevated you to a new level. But what was that spark that captured you and started your surfing addiction?
Well, I was sort of a beach kid, and like a lot of people, I sort of splashed around and you know, body surfed and rode rafts and things when I was small, and the big guys were out on surfboards, and it seemed beyond us, and then slowly it began to seem not so out of the question. I was about 10 when I first got on a surfboard and stood up, and it was a huge thrill. I was at a good beginner break called San Onofre, which makes a lot of difference, you know, where you can get a nice long ride on your feet on a kind of stable board and really get the full sense of sort of momentum over water that you sort of never get over. And then I really learned it at a place called California Street in Ventura, California. We were there a lot, my family, when I was small, and then we moved to Hawaii when I was 13, and by then I was pretty serious about surfing, and that was, as you say, a new level, both the surfing and the surf, and then I was deeper into it than I realized. I mean, I didn't think about it, but little did I know I'd still be doing it 50 years later.
I'm amazed, William, how well you remember so many of your rides. As I was going through here, especially when I was getting towards the end and you're talking about surfing over on the other side of the Atlantic and Madeira and off the coast of Portugal, when you talk about catching waves in Fiji, and I, just all the rides that you talk about and all the times, are they really that internalized for you?
Well, it's funny about remembering surfing, you know, photos, if somebody takes a photo of you on the wave, obviously it's not your experience at all. It all looked quite different from there. It's what it looked like to somebody on shore or wherever they shot the photo from, but it sticks. Or if you tell someone the story, or somebody saw your wave and said, ooh, I saw that one, and or you, as I say, you write a letter, you write it down in your journal, it's kind of, now it happened, and of course memory starts playing its tricks. Did it really happen that way? Well, if you have a video, you're closer to it. But then all the thousands and thousands of waves you ride that you can't remember even at the end of the day, what kind of waves did I get today? So it's a trick to remember waves, and I have got all these sort of memory devices. I've got, you know, extensive journals from when I was younger, and a lot of letters returned to me. Those were really useful, and a few photos, and other, you know, things that sort of help you remember individual rides or individual sessions. But at a certain point, they really do run together, and it's easy to surf sort of day in, day out, and when it's all over, be unable to recall a single wave.
Barbarian Days, A Surfing Life, the memoir of William Finnegan, who I'm speaking with here on the Book Club at 91.7. Details about the book, which won the 2016 Pulitzer Prize for Biography, on our website, wvxu.org. Barbarian Days, now available in paperback. I learned a lot about surfing, a lot more than I knew. I mean, I by no means am a surfer. You know, I've played in the waves, much as you just mentioned, but I've never truly surfed in the form that you do in Barbarian Days. And one thing that I had to kind of smile at, you're talking about, you know, riding big waves, and I guess I'm just spoiled by some footage I remember from, what, the last year or two of those monster 50 to 70 foot waves off the coast out in the middle of the Atlantic those guys were riding. And and you're talking about big waves, and you're saying 6 or 10 feet. And I'm saying that doesn't seem big, but people don't really have that much of a perception how big those little waves actually are.
Yeah, well, the measurement of waves is an inexact science, to say the least. I mean, oceanographers have their way of measuring waves, but the way surfers talk about them is it's heavily sort of discounted for machismo at every turn. non-surfers will say, oh, those waves were 20 feet high because here's a person standing on the wave and there's three or four of him and that makes 20 feet. But surfers don't measure waves that way at all. It is a whole set of conventions that will render that wave, you know, 6 feet or 8 feet. And the conventions, they're not physical, actual descriptions. And you can tell that partly because there's no such thing as a 7 foot wave or a 9 foot wave. I mean, surfers would laugh if you said that. They're these conventions. And guys do surf giant waves, 50 feet, 70 feet. People say things like that. It's pretty meaningless. But there are, you know, scarier and more dangerous and more gigantic waves. And the people who actually surf those waves are very, very, very few guys. It's a small elite of guys with, you know, strangely built nervous systems that can paddle out into surf like that, because it gets anywhere near that and the rest of us are all, you know, huddling on shore. I've surfed bigger waves and kind of pushed my limits, but nothing like big wave surfers, who, like I say, a very specialized group.
Well, I know I'm talking to you at the end of a long string of interviews, and there are so many fascinating aspects of your memoir, and especially when it comes to the surfing world and talking about the surfing social contract and many of the other adventures that you've had in your life. But I'm curious about what other folks have been most interested in finding out after they've read Barbarian Days.
I think a lot of people have surprised me by saying, yeah, this is not a book about surfing, which I love to hear. And they'll tell me it's about men, or it's about obsession, or it's about love, or whatever they say. I'm happy to hear, because it is sort of an autobiography and meant to be about a lot of other things, excuse me, besides surfing. But it's more the sort of observations and the questions. People who have read it often get a lot of it. I mean, if someone hasn't read it, they might say, what's the title about? And I'm happy to talk about that. But people who've read it are often kind of replete with an opinion as opposed to a question.
Oh.
Here's what this book meant to me, which I love.
Well, I have to say, I love how you, throughout the book, I mean, there's a lot of surfing in here, William. I mean, you know, it's a lot of surfing, but it is, you know, what is happening around that surfing that can be very revealing and very surprising, and especially those parallels that you draw when it comes to real life and the journalistic aspects of your work and how surfing kind of informed what you were writing about, too.
Yeah, I think, I mean, some people have pointed out that some of the surf travel and even just like the opening section of the book where I'm kind of tossed into this strange rough school in Honolulu as an outsider, but especially some of the surf travel where, again, you're in strange worlds trying to find waves in Indonesia where nobody's been with a surfboard before, that kind of thing, that some of these things are obvious templates for the work I ended up doing, you know, a lot of foreign correspondence and conflict reporting and broadly defined political reporting in the developing world, especially where I just land up somewhere and try to get the lay of the land and get local people to talk to me and find out what's going on. Well, it's not the same thing as trying to find the best place to do some incredibly useless thing like surf, but there's some of the same skills. You know, I'm sort of comfortable. I mean, nobody's comfortable being dropped into Somalia, but it's some of the same skills, survival and generally getting your bearings, kind of work across that membrane. As much as those two worlds have kind of pulled at each other in my life, they've also complemented each other.
thank you for the reminiscence and your book and the perspective, a new perspective on surfing, life, the universe, and everything. Thank you, William.
Oh, thank you, Mark. Thanks for having me.
William Finnegan. The book is Barbarian Days, A Surfing Life, New York Times bestseller, now out in paperback, named a best book of the year by many outlets, and winner of the 2016 Pulitzer Prize for Biography. You can learn more about the book at wvxu.org. This is the Book Club at 91.7.